This is a Chronicle podcast, bringing you ideas in the service of medicine.
From the Chronicle podcast system, this is Vendor on Psoriasis with Dr. Ron Vendor. Based on the popular Vendor on Psoriasis column in the Chronicle of Skin and Allergy, Dr. Vendor provides brief synopses of recent significant clinical developments in psoriasis research and provides his observations and comments to accompany each report. In each episode, Dr. Vendor will answer questions and offer his expert observations and anecdotes on treating this chronic disease. If you have a question for him or want to be in touch at any time, just send an email to vendor@chronicle.org. That's V-N-D-E-R at chronicle.org. And, if you attach a voice clip, we might even use your question on an upcoming episode. Support for this podcast comes from Sun Pharma Canada. Sun Pharma is a world leader in specialty therapeutics and is now positioned to be an even larger contributor to the Canadian dermatology landscape. Learn more at www.sunpharma.com. And now, here's Jeremy Visser.
Welcome back. I'm Jeremy Visser of the Chronicle of Skin and Allergy. You're listening to the Vendor on Psoriasis podcast with Dr. Ron Vendor. In our 16th episode, Dr. Vendor will be talking about methotrexate and non-melanoma skin cancer, psoriatic skin lesions, and face-to-face time between patients and physicians. Well, look at that. It's our sweet 16, Dr. Vendor, and here I am without a cake.
I know, and you didn't even dress up for it. But if we were in Mexico, it would be a quinceañera, something like that, when they're 15, right? So anyway, here we are in Canada, sweet 16. Thanks, Jeremy.
Our first study looks at the link between methotrexate and non-melanoma skin cancer. What are your thoughts on this study, Dr. Vendor?
Thank you very much for that study that you brought to my attention. You know, like, psoriasis and methotrexate are full of side effects, of which non-melanoma skin cancer can be one of them. And we don't really know how non-melanoma skin cancer in patients that have psoriasis are affected by methotrexate when combining the two. So this was just a systematic review of the literature looking at databases going back from to 1946. So I'm not sure, I can't even remember what papers would look like there. Were they chiseled on stone? So we'd have to ask some of our older colleagues. But anyway, they looked at the development of non-melanoma skin cancer in cohorts over a pre-specified criteria. This was analyzed and it looked at over 1,400 abstracts that met their inclusion criteria. And of this, there were almost 12,000 patients that had psoriasis, over 2,000 that were taking methotrexate from the data that they got. And they found an odds ratio of 2.8 for non-melanoma skin cancer development in patients that had psoriasis that were taking methotrexate versus those psoriasis patients that were not taking methotrexate. Now, based on what they found here is that these psoriasis patients that are a higher risk, like 2.8 times higher of developing non-melanoma skin cancer than patients that were not taking methotrexate. Now, it is unclear whether these were modified and adjusted for sun exposure, geographic location, previous number of malignancies, ultraviolet B, narrowband UVB exposure in treating psoriasis, prove a therapy in treating psoriasis, and if they had other comorbidities, such as other immunosuppressive diseases or were on any other medication. So it's hard to completely come to a conclusion because generally this study, although it had a lot of patients, had so many confounding factors. Now the numbers are big, but the context is very difficult to interpret. Now, I will say that generally dermatologists are very aware and are very astute at monitoring these patients for non-melanoma skin cancer anyway, maybe due to other medications that they may be on, such as cyclosporine or other comorbidities or previous sun use. But it is good to be aware that patients that may be on methotrexate could be monitored a little bit more closely.
Our next study looks at clearance of psoriatic skin lesions using an epidural nerve block with lidocaine. What did you think about this study, Dr. Vender?
Well, this one's a little bit tough. And this is sort of something that it's a bit anecdotal, and someone may have noticed that when they injected this, that there was a difference where the plaque went away. We've seen this with injecting Botox into lesions as well. And of course, we know for sure that injecting corticosteroid into a plaque improve. So what they did here is this is sort of more investigational, where they used a Miquimod to elicit aberrant cutaneous nerve outgrowth and looking at neural peptide calcitonin gene related peptides in the dorsal root ganglion and so forth. And they did single cell RNA, very, very complicating sequencing that were done with the RNA. And what they found is that the lidocaine inhibited IL-23 production in dendritic cells that were in the dorsal root ganglion of the neuron. So they thought that maybe epidural nerve blocks with lidocaine could be an effective therapy for some patients. And I think that this is great theoretically, but I think that you really need clinical trials with proper cohorts to see whether this is a true treatment. Certainly, I wouldn't suggest it for any of my patients based on this study.
Finally, we look at face-to-face time between dermatologists and patients regarding race. What did you take away from this study, Dr. Vender?
So this is very interesting and a very, very important subject. Face-to-face time that the physician and a patient, no matter what specialty, is extremely important. As we did in our last podcast, we looked at shared decision-making that is important as well. But this was looking at whether the communication had to do with race. And their conclusion came, it was that it was extremely unclear whether differences exist in the amount of time a dermatologist spends with a patient that has psoriasis based on race or ethnicity. So they looked at this and they really were not able to come to a conclusion, thankfully. I just would be extremely surprised if this is a case, and it would be very difficult to know. You would need to know the race and ethnicity of the dermatologist. Does it improve with the same race or ethnicity? I have a strong belief that physicians are unbiased and take care of patients equally, and no matter what race or ethnicity, at least I would hope that. Patient needs our help no matter what race or ethnicity they are or what financial condition that they're in and many other aspects.
Our first listener question this week comes from Hamilton, Ontario. Similar to the first study where methotrexate was linked to an increased risk of non-melanoma skin cancer, how do you counsel patients in regard to risk management when prescribing treatments?
So whenever you prescribe anything, a patient will always ask, does this make me more sensitive to the sun? This is not what that previous study had shown, but it always is important to talk about sun protection, especially with photosensitizing type of drugs, of which methotrexate is really not. I believe that as the patient's skin improves on methotrexate, there may be some lesions that persist, and the physician must be aware that these could be non-melanoma skin cancer or pre-malignant lesion, or sometimes it's even cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. So I counsel the patients to say, if you have persistent spots, when you come see me, make sure that we address those and have a good look at the patient, even though the patient may say, oh, they're totally clear on the methotrexate or a biologic or biologic plus methotrexate. I think it's important to have good skin exams at each visit, even if they're clear or not, to make sure that you're not missing any non-melanoma skin cancer.
Our next question comes from Saskatchewan. Our last study looked at face-to-face time spent with a dermatologist and how race factored into that. Are there some resources you would recommend a dermatologist looking to better treat and serve patients with skin of color?
So it's extremely important that patients with skin of color are addressed the same as all other patients, of course, and the skin diseases can present differently. in patients that have skin of color. And I think that it's not the patients that necessarily need to be educated, it's that the physicians need to be educated on the different appearances and different skin diseases that can occur, or different presentations of skin diseases that can occur in patients with skin of color. And only when that is achieved, then the physicians be able to counsel that patient that has skin of color with guidance on treating their skin and educating themselves. There are physicians that may specialize in that in larger cities, and these patients may have an interest in seeing these physicians. And of course, there are many online resources as well, especially from the American Academy of Dermatology.
And a follow-up to the last question, what factors do you consider when evaluating how much face-to-face time is needed for each patient?
Boy, that is such an open-ended question, because every patient requires different time. There are patients that we know require hand-holding and require much more time than other patients. There are patients that want to come see you to be reassured that their skin disease is under good control. There are patients that just want to come see you to tell you that everything's good and then just leave the clinic. Their patients like, okay, you know, I'm not coming back anymore. That's all I really wanted to tell you, is that my skin is doing well. And then there are other patients that have less serious conditions that need more time and explanation. I think that you need to spend a lot of time, especially with parents of pediatric patients. You need to spend more time generally with geriatric patients as well, that may have the family members with them, which makes visits a bit longer. But generally in a clinic, everything's pretty well balanced out. Some need more time, some need less time. And those that need more time should never be shrugged off. They should always be given the time that they need, of course, within reason. If you find that you have a practice where you like to talk and explain a lot to patients and spend a lot more time with them, then you change your appointment schedule so that you don't run into trouble and you don't run late. So for example, in my later years of practice, I've been 32 years in practice now. In the past 5 years, I've doubled my appointment times so that I can talk to patients more and spend more time with the patient. Of course, that may increase my waiting list, but I'm happier doing this, and my patients seem to be happier as well with the increase in face-to-face time that I provide to them.
Thank you, Dr. Vender. Listeners, if you have comments or questions for Dr. Vender, send them over. Send an email to health@chronicle.org. Add a voice clip attachment to your questions, and you might appear in a future episode of this podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with your friends. You can subscribe at Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is produced in cooperation with Sun Pharma Canada. I'm Jeremy Visser of Chronicle Companies. Your host has been Dr. Ron Vender from Hamilton, Ontario, founder and director of Dermatrials Research Incorporated and Venderm Consulting, specializing in treatments and management solutions for individuals with psoriasis. We'll talk again next week.
Don't use that. Do try this, says Vender on psoriasis. Dr. Vender on psoriasis.